He's the voice of the Valley. Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
Okay.
I got some data points here I may or may not reference.
Excellent. We're ready to go, Robbie?
We're in the business of numbers.
We're ready to go.
All right, that's it.
Headphones. Jack Nugent. No, you don't need the headphones. You don't need the headphones. Unless we would get a phone call, then you would need the headphones. But welcome.
Thank you.
Come right. Get yourself lined up. Right there you go. Right to that.
Sure.
There. Perfect. Perfect. So, Jack, you're here. We're going to talk about the Navy Maritime Industrial Base. But I'd like to back up to your background because you were a submarine guy, I believe.
Yes, I was. Jack Nugent. My official title now is I'm the New York State Workforce Development Lead for the U.S. Navy Maritime Industrial Base. Like all of us, came into that role into a very interesting background. Born and raised on Long Island, so a lot of times people see me and think, hey, federal government, you're just you're just some D.C. person here to fix New York's problems, but I am not. I'm a lifelong New Yorker, and so it's good to be back.
And
in
actually,
my home state.
I'm glad you said that because, boy, if anybody has any understanding about Long Island's long, long history, probably literally going back to the American Revolution of manufacturing and all the way through, absolutely critical through World War II. And Grumman is certainly a company that comes to mind.
Yeah, and Grumman is like a bad breakup that Long Island still hasn't gotten over. I mean, did Grumman leave, what, 95?
Maybe.
Around 95, I know it was either right before I was born or when I was very young. And Long Island manufacturers are still pissed off about that.
Yes.
It's still a black eye. And, this right now, right, with what the Navy Maritime Industrial Base is doing represents the first time since Grumman left where military and defense manufacturing is really making a comeback on Long Island, and people are almost hesitant because they know what happened last time with Grumman. But anyway, so I, SUNY Maritime grad, went on an ROTC scholarship, commissioned in the U.S. Navy. When you commission as a ROTC officer, they give you, well, if you're on the traditional path, they give you five options. They say, okay, you can be a pilot. You can be a naval flight officer, which is like what Goose was in Top Gun.
Yep.
You can be a surface warfare officer. You can be a nuclear trained surface warfare officer. So you could be on an aircraft carrier, or you can be a submarine officer. And, being the 21-year-old college hockey player that I was at the time, also being over 6 feet, I said, well, okay, I'm going to rank submarines last.
Hockey player.
Yeah.
All right. Pretty cool.
Yeah,
very nice.
And why do we mention that? Because hockey in your family is
hockey is pretty important.
Pretty,
in my family,
pretty big
yeah.
deal.
Like my cousin was a college hockey player.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, what position?
I'm a defenseman. Yeah, and I played Division III. I wasn't anything too special.
I think it was like Division II either. I'm not trying to one up you here.
No, it's great. That's great. Are you a Bruins fan?
Rangers actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right, well, equally as miserable of a season.
It's still
I'm an Islander fan, so we're, yeah. we're all yeah.
It's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so, I want to go back one second, Jack Nugent. I just really want folks to please understand how critically important this manufacturing issue is. And Grumman, I had to look this up. I'm not pulling this from memory, but World War II, the Grumman Wildcat, the Hellcat, the Avengers. I mean, these were absolutely, absolutely iconic aircraft that allowed us to. Especially going up against the Japanese Zeros, and these are a lot of the aircraft I believe that were launched off of the aircraft carriers that allowed us to pursue the war in the Pacific.
Yeah, and like so much of industry, right? There's been mergers, there's been acquisitions, and unfortunately, in the last three or four decades, we've seen a lot of American manufacturing capacity and capability move overseas.
Yes.
And that hasn't really hurt us. And I'll speak specifically in ships and submarines, right? Because that's where my expertise is. But that hasn't hurt us as much because around 2000, we really curtailed submarine production, right? In the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, we were building a new attack submarine, the Seawolf class submarine. It was a robust, really capable, really expensive submarine that was kind of meant to match, you know, what the Russians were doing. Mm-hmm. And then the Berlin Wall fell. The Cold War ended. The new administration came in with their new priorities and said, you know, hey, we're gonna move investments elsewhere. And you know, I don't have the exact number in my head of how many Seawolf class submarines we were going to build, but we only ended up building three of them. And you know, submarines are the most similar thing that we make in the U.S. to a rocket ship than anything else, right? I mean, think about it. It's a completely self-sustaining platform that has to operate in austere environments with really little to no transferable skills, you know, for the people that operate them, right? Like, there's really, I mean, other than engineering, right, there's really no background that will help you have an advantage when you step onto a submarine and, you know, day one. Everything, it's a new language, whether it's, you know, operating a nuclear reactor underwater or learning how to, you know, combat casualties underwater or learning how to navigate something that doesn't have a window.
Right.
So submarine manufacturing is not something where you can just stop and then 15 years later, you know, flick a switch and start up again. And we're really feeling the pain from that as a nation right now. And the fact that we've outsourced so much of our manufacturing capability in the last 20 years is not making that any better. You know, we right now, the last time the United States, and I'll just speak on submarines, the last time the United States was building submarines at the clip that we are now was the Cold War era. And since then, America's manufacturing industrial-based capacity has atrophied over 60%. You know, and I'll just, from a workforce perspective, right, and there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of different things the maritime industrial base is doing. We have a lot of different lines of effort. We have, you know, we're making investments and putting resources towards additive manufacturing and technology
development. Which is 3D printing is what most people would know
yes,
it as.
Yes. You know, supply chain development, strategic communications, targeted marketing. But just from a workforce perspective alone, in the next 10 years, we need to hire, and when I say we, I mean companies, our suppliers, right?
Yes.
Companies that build parts for ships and submarines. Over 250,000 new yes. skilled workers nationally. Yes. And that's not only to, you know, make up for the amount of people that we need in shops right now, but also to account for the disproportionate amount of folks that are going to hit retirement age
in
the next
5 years. Jack Nugent, let me add to what you just said, because did you say 250,000?
250,000 for submarines and ships.
Okay.
140,000 for submarines alone.
So that's just the direct hire. Now, regular listeners, Harold King and I have spent the last many, many, many years, because then that 250,000, then in the ecosystem of the entire distribution systems and all that have to get built is or grown, not built. Built is the wrong word. I always use the organic analogy. You have to grow these things. And this is why, to your point, Jack, why it takes so long to do and why I have been so vocal about, while we can transfer that institutional knowledge that you just talked about, while we do have some of the master trades people who can hand those skills off to a new generation.
Yeah, and you might ask, right, what are we doing here sitting talking about ship and submarine construction right. in the mid-Hudson, right? I mean, you can't drive along the Taconic and see an aircraft carrier or a submarine like, you know, you can in certain parts of Connecticut and Virginia and the Gulf Coast. But, you know, let me tell you, and the Navy realizes this, New York State is a powerhouse of ship and submarine manufacturing. Statewide, there's over 650 different companies that build parts for ships and submarines.
Some of them used to be my insurance clients when we had the insurance business. So
I believe you.
Oh yeah.
Here in the mid Hudson, there's over 60 companies that build parts for ships and submarines. Right. I don't need to go and list them because you know, there is some sensitivity there. But you know, a lot of them don't. You know, you're not going to drive past and they're going to say, hey, we build submarines here, we build ships here. But, you know, over 90% of our industrial base right now that, you know, that goes towards putting these parts and components on submarines and ships are small to mid-sized manufacturers, right? They're not these massive, you know, shipyards that you see in Groton or Newport News. They're these tiny little mom and pop shops that really look no different when you drive by than the building that we're in right now. Just kind of a building on the side of the road.
Which, by the way, is absolutely our strength as a nation, And in my opinion, if we go back through history, and especially during World War II, we did not have the big industrial – we had some big industrial centers, but we had these tens and tens of thousands of small manufacturers spread across the entire country that became almost impossible for an enemy to attack in mass.
Yeah, and we just like we're going to win the next war, God forbid it ever happens, we won World War II because of the strength of our
industrial
base, right? I mean, I think was it Hermann Goering, right? He had a great quote during World War II, you know, that the Panzer tank is far superior to the American tanks, but they always just have one more than we do.
Yeah.
That's the Freedom's Forge, right? And our leadership has referred to this as our Freedom's Forge moment, our Manhattan Project. It really is a manufacturing undertaking, both from a public and private standpoint, that the Navy has never really embarked on in our history.
So, Jack Nugent, I was out yesterday, and Chuck Benford was in yesterday as the Chief Operating Officer, sat in for me, and Harold was in yesterday for his twice monthly series on manufacturing.
Great.
But then following that was our Dutchess County historian, Will Tatum.
Oh, boy.
And I mention this because of the fact that you talked about shipbuilding in the Hudson Valley. I mean, they were talking about, when they forged the chain across the Hudson River to keep the British warships from making. So that's, I say that because this is the history that literally goes back to the American Revolution and prior. I personally love it. I've lived on this river my entire life. It is the first designated American Heritage River, and as we head toward the 250th anniversary of the founding of this great nation of ours, all of this stuff in my mind, the pieces of what I see as a giant puzzle all come together.
What a lot of people consider now, I'm not talking about the Turtle or the Monitor or the Merrimack, but
right.
What a lot of people consider the first modern U.S. Navy submarine was launched by the Electric Boat Company on Long Island, which a lot of people don't realize.
Yes.
And you can still go to the beach today, and there's a plaque, but it was right before they up and moved to Connecticut. But just back on how our manufacturing base is atrophied.
Can you hold that thought?
Yeah, yeah,
we're going to get in our quick sports report here, 7:46 on Hudson Valley Focus Live on the Beacon. Jack Nugent is going to be in studio with me until 9 o'clock this morning. So keep your beverages refreshed and stay tuned. This is really important stuff. Let's get into the sports report for our friends at Atlas Star. 7:51 on Hudson Valley Focus. So you were going to run down some information, Jack Nugent.
Yes, yeah, so we talk about 40 plus years of significant reduction in shipbuilding and maintenance capability capacity here. So since the 70s and the 80s, right? And these are some pretty eye-opening numbers. Again, this is all public information.
Yes.
Right? I know sometimes we talk about submarines and people get a little squirrely, but this is all stuff you can look up on the internet.
I should have gotten a hold of my neighbor, Dave, to make sure he tuned in this morning because he was a submarine guy.
Oh, was he?
Yep.
Oh, he's a bubblehead.
Yep.
Good.
He was a engineering degree out of college and then wound up in submarines.
Nice.
So,
what's he doing now? Retired or
owns some real estate?
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. None of us ever retire.
Gotta love passive income.
Well, no. His is active in terms of rental properties.
Gotcha.
You have to work your ass off for. So
yeah. All right. So since the 1970s, 80s, U.S. production of world's commercial ships was at 5% in 1970. It's below 0.2% today. We talk about a decrease in manufacturing workforce as a percentage of working population, about 35% in the early 1980s to about 12% today. Back in the late 70s, 80s, we had 8 public shipyards. 6 of them were nuclear. So, certain shipyards can work on nuclear, material. Others can't. We're down to 4 today. All 4 are nuclear. Private nuclear shipyards, we had 3. Now we have 2. One is in Groton, Connecticut. One's in Newport News, Virginia. We had 8 private shipyards closed. And this is for ship manufacturing, leaving only 7 private new construction yards. And our the amount of main nuclear suppliers, right? So it's not necessarily companies that make nuclear reactors, but
right.
companies that make parts and components that are capable of handling, water that's been through a nuclear reactor or radiation, right? Up to nuclear level quality standards has gone from about 17,000 to 5,000. And so those are just, I think, some some data points to show how American maritime manufacturing has atrophied and the uphill battle that we're up against right now.
And if we think about this, Jack Nugent, you know, as you were saying that, I was taking like a mental tour around the nation. We talked about the East Coast, but when you go down around the Gulf Coast, what was produced there during World War II, up the West Coast of this country, through the Great Lakes, and you know, it's just. It is a truly amazing history of what we've seen. I mean, some of the Great Lakes businesses, the ore carriers on the Great Lakes, well, that would take the ore to the smelters to be able to produce the materials that we need. This is the, you know, the ecosystem of how it all comes together.
I can't stop thinking about the Edmund Fitzgerald.
It just came to mind as I was saying it.
Gordon Lightfoot came to mind. No, so the U.S. Navy has identified, I think it's 7 different maritime centers of gravity where this is a national effort, right? We have workforce investments over 50 states. We have supply chain investments over 33 different states. But there are some areas where we're really targeting, and hence why I'm here, right? We've put dedicated workforce people in these areas because they're locations with a really high density of suppliers, and B, a high population of available workforce or a strong history rooted in manufacturing. So those are some of them are obvious, some of them are less obvious, right? New England, New York State, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is the state with the highest amount of companies that build parts for ships and submarines in the United States. And you wouldn't think Pennsylvania because it's for the most part landlocked. It's not completely landlocked. But then there's Virginia, the Gulf Coast, the Great Lakes, and Southern California. Those are our maritime centers of gravity. Those are where an overwhelming majority of our maritime production takes place in the U.S.
And it's really it's so critically important. So I forget what got me thinking about this the other day, maybe knowing that you were coming in. I was thinking about the shipbuilding on the Great Lakes, and I remember the Weekly Reader when the St. Lawrence Seaway opened. And I was in grade school. I had to go back and look it up, but it was 1959. And it was, you know, quite an engineering marvel that happened at that point in time. But again, this allows access to the Atlantic Ocean from the Great Lakes. And as we said, I mean, a lot of the shipbuilding that was there was the transport ships across the Great Lakes that were moving materials or grain, food, all of that. All of this is so critically important. It's 7:56. Jack is here with me until 9 o'clock this morning. We've got a lot to talk about. We'll talk about the training initiatives that driven down into even the public school level.
K through 12. You got to start them young.
K through 12 and grow up from there. And I guess, in terms of exciting young people about this, I think it's the perfect time to do it. When we talk about moving to the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution and how much of the history, has taken place here in the Northeast, getting young people involved in that, even at the youngest levels, and say, hey, you're part of building on a history that's, 200, 300 years old.
Yeah, we look at our target audience, right? And we need everyone, right? We need all ages and demographics and sexes. But I think if you have someone who's ready to step onto a manufacturing floor at whatever age that is, say it's 18,
yep,
and they've had zero exposure, they've had zero prior exposure to the skilled trades, right? Whether that's when I say skilled trades, I mean welding, I mean CNC, computer numerical control machining, right? Those are your automated, lathes and mills and presses, right? And these amazing machines, whether it's a Haas or a Doosan, you put a piece of machinery in, and you plug in some logic on a controller, and you kind of just stand there and watch it make all the cuts for you, and then it prints.
We've
it out
got
for
here
you.
I think they're Putnam County, but not too far from here. A Fryer Machine Systems making 5-axis CNC machines.
Yep.
And again, these are
and 5-axis is a pretty advanced CNC machine.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So and this was something I come from a background of submarine operations, and so when we talk about CNC machining, when you hear 3-axis machine, it just means that the part is able to move along the X, the Y, and the Z axis.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you add that 4th and 5th axis, we talk about different rotations, right? So I know I'm on the radio, so I can't show you, but it's like it's swiveling and then yes. pivoting.
Yeah.
If you were in the if y'all were in the room with us,
and you'd see and what I was as these about. Machines now can actually change their machine tools.
Yep. And so tooling is a whole other specialty.
Yeah.
Right. And being able to know how to load these machines. But anyway, welding, CNC machining, advanced manufacturing, quality inspection, right? Metrology. There are these amazing machines out there. They're coordinate measurement machines, CMM machines. And you know, similar to how advanced CNC machines are, you can put a finished product on this CMM machine, and it'll laser measure all of the components and tell you where the defects are, and that's really important, especially for nuclear level.
We have a company here in Poughkeepsie called Dorsey Metrology.
Yep,
and that's you know,
and these, and then so we talk about electricians, we talk about. Electronic technicians, which is different, right? An electronic technician will generally work at a very small desk. They'll do soldering. They'll do microchips.
It is 7:59 on Hudson Valley Focus Live, closing in on 8 o'clock. Jack Nugent is in studio with me for the next hour. We have a lot of work to do, so meet us back here in a minute. Jack Nugent, Maritime Industrial Base. 8:06 on Hudson Valley Focus on the Beacon. Jack Nugent, U.S. Navy Maritime Industrial Base. Give me your title again there.
Workforce Development Lead for New York State.
Okay. Now, you were in New Jersey, though, yesterday.
I was, yeah.
So
I had to cross state lines. So we, you know, I was talking about the Maritime Centers of Gravity earlier. We don't have... you know, we don't have a dedicated workforce person in New Jersey. So I think as we're realizing that there's a pretty strong supplier base in northern New Jersey, we have over 10 critical suppliers in northern New Jersey. Now, I define northern New Jersey as, you know, anywhere where you can take public transportation to New York City. So
sure.
North of Trenton, pretty much. And so, you know, we hosted an industry day there yesterday. We had Council of Industry,
mm-hmm.
Which was great. And we brought in folks from our the leadership on we have a non-for-profit that works with us. We brought in some folks from there. We brought in the head of small businesses programs for the supply chain side of General Dynamics Electric Boat. We had someone from the Maritime Industrial Base supply chain team. We had someone from the U.S. Navy Talent Pipeline Program, which is a you know, they help with our workforce efforts. And we had a room full of 60 plus both suppliers and educator partners at NJIT, and it was a great event, right? And these events are really good to bring everyone together and to kind of just let them know, you know, all facets of what the Maritime Industrial Base is trying to do, right? We have a really difficult challenge, and there's a lot of different lines of effort that we're undertaking to tackle this challenge. And so kind of making sure that everyone knows who the right point of contact is within the Maritime Industrial Base is really important. And these events are a good
one. You know, when Harold King and I have had this conversation many times before, I always go back to the... You know, the childhood game there. You put all the little cards, you know, face down with you know, the apples and the giraffes and all. And it's the matching game, making the matches of who's who and who partners with who. But that's you know, how it works.
And organizations like Harold's are so important to what we're trying to do
yes.
in New York State, right? And I didn't realize that coming in, but we have this amazing network of manufacturing organizations throughout the state, and they're all under this big umbrella that's called the Manufacturers Alliance.
Yes,
in each region, right? So Long Island, you have Ignite yeah. Long Island. You know, here you have, you know, Council of Industry.
Across upstate New York. It's
yes.
been a number of years when I went to
Center
Albany.
Center for Economic Growth in Albany.
Yeah, I went up to Albany with Harold a few years ago before I was doing the daily radio show, and when they had one of the statewide gatherings
yeah.
of all of those organizations together.
Yeah, and then as you go across the I-90 corridor, I mean, in Syracuse, Mohawk Valley, you have Macne, and they're a powerhouse. In Rochester, you have the RTMA. In Buffalo, you have the BNMA. And then there's a corresponding manufacturing extension partnership in all these regions too, a corresponding MEP, right? And so getting to know these manufacturing organizations and the MEPs, they are such a good help in bridging, you know, the educators to the manufacturers. And it turns out that educators, right, the people that are training these skilled workers – and the manufacturers, right, the people that need these skilled workers, aren't always as good at talking with each other as you might hope.
Oh.
There's a huge disconnect
there. I have
there.
Spent years on tearing down silos.
Yeah, and there's companies that do it really well.
Yeah.
There's companies that do it really, really well, but there's other companies that for whatever reason. And I think a lot of times it's just they don't have the capacity, right? They're a 13-person company.
That's part of it.
They need to be completely focused on their bottom line. Absolutely. They can't go out and, you know,
so send, Jack Nugent, to your point, this is where the politicians involved are an absolute, and you do not have to comment on this, absolute disappointment, because first thing you need to do is you just like an agricultural dish, you have to have a fertile environment where crops will actually grow. And when you're talking about here about some of our very high regulatory costs and regulations that impact these small businesses that you talked about, very high energy costs, high tax base, all of those things make it very difficult for these companies to actually expand the company and the workforce that we're talking about. I mean, even things like where you have a company that is, 40 employees, and you say, gosh, we could really up this to, 50 or 60 or 70 employees. Now, all of a sudden, once you break that magic number of 50, you have massive numbers of federal regulations that ramp up the cost of doing business.
Right.
And it's very difficult for businesses to necessarily leverage that up there.
Well, what I will say politically, right, there was an executive order that came out last week, and this is obviously the federal level, but the revitalizing U.S. maritime power, I think it was called Restoring America's Maritime Dominance. There's some interesting language in there but it is clear that the new administration is committed to shipbuilding, mm-hmm. which I think is a positive sign for our organization. There's a lot of interesting language about making it easier from a regulatory perspective, from a financial perspective, for shipbuilding to occur in the United States. And, obviously that's just that's from the fact sheet, right? And we'll see how this plays out. But right. I think that's a positive sign. And on the state level, we hope there's a trickle down. And, what we try to do at the Maritime Industrial Base, and this unfortunately takes up a lot of our program manager's time, but go and speak to these congressmen and women, whether it's in D.C. or it's on Long Island or in the Hudson Valley, and educate them. Because we have a lot of people in Congress and in the Senate from New York that sit on these committees, right? Whether it's the Sea Power Committee or the Subcommittee on Shipbuilding. And these are the people that have a ton of influence.
And sadly, I've spent years interacting with these individuals, and many of them have little understanding of what we've talked about that has to exist under here, and how you create the environment to do it, or the fact that even the strategic importance of we must be self-sufficient as a nation, period.
Yeah, I agree, and it's up. A lot of times, again, it's us being the ones who are educating these people, and it's something we're happy to do, right? I mean, I'm from Long Island, and I spent 6 years on a nuclear submarine, and I didn't realize what was made in New York State. I mean, it is eye watering what comes out of New York State that goes onto these submarines, right? And we think of take Groton, for example, all the the tens of thousands of parts that go onto a submarine, and so few of those parts are made in Groton, right?
Yes.
That's just the assembly area.
Yes.
Right? And there's so much that leaves New York State and goes to these major shipyards, and it's really important because we have the workforce here, right? It's really expensive to live in New York State, and not everyone goes out and gets a college degree. And this goes back to the workforce conversation, right? How do we, and this is the messaging, how do we get the message out there that these skilled trades jobs are available locally, right? Like if you live in the Hudson Valley, or if you live on Long Island, you don't need to get on a train every day and go into New York City if you want to be a blue-collar worker. You don't need to join a union, right? You can be a welder, you can be a machinist right in your hometown. And oh, by the way, these are jobs with really good paying salaries and good upward mobility.
And if you're talking about a welder who's going to work on a nuclear attack submarine, mm-hmm. we're talking about a skill level that is master artisan skill level.
Yeah. And you might be saying, well, how do we get there? And it's easier than you think, right? It's Have you heard of buildsubmarines.com? Have you checked it out?
I have.
Okay, it's this amazing resource that we've launched, and it highlights all of the different partnerships that we have with educational institutions. We have dozens of partnerships nationally with educational institutions, whether it's with a community college or our national training center, Accelerated Training for Defense Manufacturing down in Virginia, where you can go and you can get, whether it's a 16-week education or a 2-year education, and come out with a certification in one of these skilled trades for free, right? ATDM in Virginia, you can go down, as long as you're 18, you can go down there. They'll pay for your tuition, they'll pay for your housing, and you will come out with the Maritime Industrial Bases Training Center. You'll come out with an industry-guided certification in any of the 5 skilled trades that I mentioned earlier. And yes, if you're going to do a super specialized welding at, say, Curtis Wright on Long Island, there's going to be, you know, some more training that you're going to need to undergo, but you'll be ready to step foot and start doing some welding on day one.
Build submarines. Giants are built here.
Yep. Buildsubmarines.com. It is a massive national marketing effort. I mean, we have sponsorships with Major League Baseball. You'll see in right field at Yankee Stadium behind the bullpen. It's on the field at Fenway Park. We sponsor a NASCAR. The Build Submarines car won at Watkins Glen last year. If you're going to be in the New York City area Memorial Day weekend, we're the official sponsor for the Intrepid's Fleet Week activities.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, so that's going to be a really fun weekend.
Jack Nugent, back up. We got to get in the sports break here with Rick Zolzer with some help at our friends at Atlas Star. When we come back, I want you to back up to what you said about the training program that you just outlined. I want to go back over the details of that. Back to my conversation with Jack Nugent in studio with me. This is an extended conversation because the breadth and depth of this U.S. Navy maritime industrial base. Jack Nugent, it's safe to say we let so much of this atrophy, I think was the word you used earlier, over the last 50 years, and that now it is a crisis situation to all the way K through 12 to educate young people just about the history of this nation, how important maritime industry is to it, to manufacturing, the training skills. You talked earlier about CNC machining. A lot of what goes into that is, first of all, learning to speak a foreign language. Is really what it comes
down
to.
And you said crisis. I mean, you can call it whatever you want, but I mean, if you look at the 2025 president's defense budget, and this defense budget, you know, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat in office, will show you that similar priorities, right? $112 million in workforce development alone for the Navy's 1+2 strategy. Yes. And the 1+2 is one Columbia class submarine, which is the replacement of the Ohio class, which is scheduled to. First one scheduled to be commissioned in 2030, and then the two is two Virginia class submarines per year, which are currently being built. We are not at that number yet, but that's the demand, right? Both from a strategic deterrence and a power projection standpoint. We were talking a little bit about ATDM, our National Training Center, down in Danville, Virginia. So ATDM, again, Accelerated Training for Defense Manufacturing. It's a training facility down there. It's co-located with the Advanced Manufacturing Center of Excellence.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Danville, Virginia, right on the North Carolina, well, close to the North Carolina border. We've trained more than 750 skilled workers there, not a dime out of any of their pockets since February 25. And we're scaling to full capacity. Once the training center is at full capacity, we'll be able to graduate 1,000. I wish it was 100,000.
Right.
Yeah, that would solve our problem pretty fast. 1,000 skilled workers annually, fully further strengthening America's maritime workforce pipeline. And these are not people that are joining the military, Tom. I want to make that very clear.
Right.
These are people that are, you know, going down to ATDM. Whether they already have a job with a company or whether they don't have a job. Right. If they don't have a job, they can. And again, ATDM.org. You can apply, it's not an extremely high barrier to entry, because we need these people. And when they come out, there's job fairs, and you can move to, we have suppliers in in 50 states. You can, as long as you live near one of these suppliers. If you're from New York, you certainly live near one of these suppliers. Unless you live in like the middle of nowhere, Adirondacks. But even then, we have some companies up there that build parts for ships and submarines. You'll have a job waiting for you, and these are jobs with tremendous benefits and tremendous upwards mobility. And you know, some jobs, of course, require a college degree, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to be an engineer or maybe some planning jobs, but most of these jobs don't.
Right. And to your point, Jack Nugent, going back to what I said to one of my clients, without saying exactly who it was, where they were making components, mm-hmm. That were going over to Groton, Connecticut. They had to have an engineer on staff, licensed engineer on staff, because of the fact that the critical nature of the heat treating and the, you know, I guess I'll call them exotic metals and alloys that are used in these different components. I mean, this is a big
deal. That's a good word. Yeah.
And when you're talking about transferring that particular firm had five generations of the same family. Of transferring that from you know, master to apprentice on down the line, understanding the metallurgy of how you heat treat these different metals for those different applications. To a large degree, you don't get that out of a textbook.
No, and you talk about these rare and exotic alloys. I mean, there's certain alloys that the Navy is really having trouble getting right now, and so we have folks in our supply chain team that are working on different sources of getting these alloys, and then we have other folks on our technology development team that are saying, okay, can we 3D print these parts instead? And we've already put 3D printed parts onto submarines, and that will revolutionize the speed at which we can launch some of these submarines. I mean, you think about, you know, there could be a supplier here in the Hudson Valley that has, I mean, I was talking to a supplier yesterday in Northern New Jersey, and they're one of our most important suppliers. They build a certain part or component for the Navy, and they are the only company in the entire country that builds them. And there's 13 employees.
Woo.
And, you know, if their production line is stymied, whether it's a workforce issue or a supply chain issue or an act of God, they could quite literally, a 13-person company could delay the delivery of a U.S. Navy nuclear submarine.
I mean,
think about
well,
that.
Well, I mean, we have there's another member of the Council of Industry. I can't remember think who it is, but they make applied thin films. And a lot of their work is for the military.
Yeah.
And again, it's a very small firm. But when the cost of electricity went up, their electric bill just skyrocketed with the shutdown of Indian Point nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
And again, it to the point that it was crippling their business, is crippling their business. But I mean, you mentioned 3D printing. So across the river at SUNY New Paltz, their school of engineering and science, one of the most advanced material sciences programs in the country, right here in the Hudson Valley.
I got to get over there.
So you asked me about the interesting people, Fred Thompson. Fred Thompson was the Admiral Painter in Hunt for Red October. Was on with me one time. There's been a bunch of them, but that was one that came to mind for sure.
Is that your favorite submarine movie? I got asked this question a lot. What my favorite submarine movie is?
Yep, it probably is. Of course, you know, we'd have to go way back before you were born. You know, the Run Silent, Run Deep.
A lot of people will tell you that Das Boot is actually the most realistic submarine.
Okay,
movie. Yeah.
Yeah. That
Crimson Tide is probably the most either that one or Hunter Killer, I'd say, are the most unrealistic ones, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. So, but again, Jack Nugent in studio with me. We're just about to go out to a break. Jack's with me another half hour yet. We have a lot to cover, because when I say the depth and breadth of this initiative that's happening now nationally, U.S. Navy Maritime Industrial Base, but also well beyond that is the rebuilding, reestablishing of a U.S. maritime industry. So back with Jack Nugent here on Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon. Jack Nugent, it is already 8:34 here on The Beacon. Jack Nugent, U.S. Navy Maritime Industrial Base, and this will be hopefully the first of many conversations going forward. As you said, here throughout New York, and particularly here throughout the Hudson Valley, we have so many businesses, so many education educational institutions to bring them together. And as you said, you know, even with the education components of this, all the way K through 12. Heading out, I mentioned the shot heard around the world. The reason I mentioned that, and as we talk about the Revolutionary War, April 19th, 1775, the battles of Lexington and Concord. So from all those days of, you know, having to produce the cannons and the armaments and the firepower that allowed us to win the American Revolution through 2025 and looking well into the future, it's all part of the same story.
Yeah, so the U.S. Navy Maritime Industrial Base, we were established in September 2024.
Right.
Prior to that, we were the Submarine Industrial Base. The SIB was established in 2019. So this is a pretty new undertaking, right? Before we were under NAVSEA team ships, and now the MIB is our own direct reporting program office under the Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, Acquisition. So here's what we're actually allowed to do.
Okay.
These are our authorities as an office, so, you know, just to make sure that's clear to everyone. So we're not the ones building submarines, right? The MIB is not building submarines. Submarines are built by General Dynamics Electric Boat in Groton, Connecticut, and Huntington Ingalls Newport News Shipbuilding in Newport News, Virginia. And then service ships are built by, you know, Bath Iron Works or Ingalls Shipbuilding down in Alabama and Mobile. And obviously there's, you know, sub-tier suppliers and companies that build parts and components throughout the 50 states. But the MIB is we are authorized to manage and execute congressional appropriations to increase capacity and improve performance across the entire submarine industrial base and surface combatant industrial base. We serve as the primary interface with shipbuilders, suppliers, and industry organizations, right? So we talked about, you know, CEG and Council of Industry. For areas that are not associated with hull-specific contracting or procurement, we support initiatives to increase in-service sustainment capacity needed to maintain the fleet, right? So we talk about some shipbuilding and submarine building delays. Well, the opposite side of that is, you know, hey, now we have ships and submarines out in the fleet that we need to keep operational.
Absolutely.
For longer than they were originally intended. I mean, the submarine that I was on, the USS Helena, which was recently decommissioned, shout out to my guardians out there, we were extended twice. You know, when I was on the Helena, we spent, you know, over 2.5 years in a shipyard availability that was supposed to only last 6 months. So I kind of know firsthand, you know, the difficulties that face American shipbuilding. And then finally, we as the MIB lead industrial-based coordination with stakeholders across U.S. government agencies, as well as engagement with international partnerships to include support for AUKUS. So if you're not familiar with AUKUS, right, another a good burden, but certainly another burden on our industrial base. AUKUS was the trilateral submarine national security partnership between the United States, Australia, and the UK, announced under the Biden administration with the heads of state of Australia and the UK,
which was very controversial when that happened.
Yeah, the French weren't thrilled about it.
Yes.
Basically, the France had an agreement with Australia to keep building. I'm not sure if it was their Collins class submarine or if it was a replacement for the Collins class submarine, but it was a diesel. That was a diesel powered submarine, right? Very different than a nuclear submarine. In all of America's submarines are nuclear powered, but I think there's only, don't quote me on this number, but it's something like 6 or 7 different countries in the world have nuclear-powered submarines, and all other submarines are diesel-powered.
Well, of course, as an aside to that, one of the things that's really important is the and I'm not a big fan of icebreakers, because I don't think we should be icebreaking the northern access, and yet Russia, in terms of their nuclear-powered icebreakers, so when people talk about, you know, Greenland and all, there's a much, much, much bigger story to our north with respect to what's actually happening and why Greenland is so strategically important.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so but back to AUKUS real quick. So the benefit, right, of this agreement is the U.S. is going to give, right, sell 3 to 5 Virginia-class submarines to the Australian Navy, and then the Australian Navy, with the help of the U.K. and the U.S., are going to have their own sovereign class of nuclear submarine. And the obvious strategic advantage to that is we now have a nuclear powered submarine ally in China's backyard.
Sure.
And now we have a home port that we can pull our submarines into and, you know, do maintenance at. And so that it's a monumental agreement, but, you know, 3 to 5 additional submarines that we now owe to a different company is just another strain on the industrial base on top of the effort to keep all these ships and submarines at sea. As we battle some shipbuilding delays.
So I want to go back. You mentioned Bath Iron Works, and I think Bath Iron Works was one of the primary builders of the littoral combat ships.
Oh, yeah.
And they have had just a very
tumultuous,
sketchy record of performance. I believe there were cost overruns, systems breakdowns. And so, again, you know, the system that was supposed to, the rationale, and littoral ships are coastal.
Yes. Littoral is the maritime word for you know, not blue ocean, but also not you know, rivers,
coast wise. Yeah, exactly. So and this is a very big deal, whether we're talking about, you know, a foreign adversary, or I hate to say it, or even if we're talking about, you know, cartels running drugs.
Oh yeah.
And of course that crosses over into the responsibility of the Coast Guard. Let's take a minute, Jack Nugent, and in terms of going all the way down to K-12, what are some of the initiatives that are addressing that?
Yeah, so we have a bunch of different programs that are designed, and some of these are in partnership with Society of Manufacturing Engineers, right, SME. Some are in partnership with General Dynamics Electric Boat, their boats program. But they're to get young people interested in STEM, and maybe to break down some of the stereotypes associated with manufacturing, right? Like, I think if you asked me when I was in grade school what manufacturing looks like, I would have shown you that picture from the high school textbook of you know, that kid in the UK during the Industrial Revolution with his top hat on, covered in soot. And that's and I'll tell you what, I've been lucky enough to walk probably over 50 shop floors now throughout New York State, and you could eat off the floor in most of these places. I mean, these are highly technical, highly specialized, really great places to go to work with excellent cultures. And I think we want to show young people that these careers are out there, right? A kid, not to quote, Gary Johnson, who's head of the, he heads the New York State, New York City NAACP, right? A kid can't be what a kid can't see.
Right.
And
that's a kid can't be what a kid can't see. What a great
shout
line.
Out Gary Johnson.
What a great line.
Yeah. And so a part of it is just getting people onto shop floors, like setting up field trips. And we work with the Workforce Development Institute on Long Island, but they're a statewide organization. They will come in and they'll provide busing, and then the companies will provide lunch, and then we'll take these kids on a field trip. But also we have a partnership. This is a great program with Electric Boat called Production Instruction, where we will literally send a welding kit, or a set of welding kits or machining kits to a high school. And they'll basically get all these different parts that need to be welded or machined that would replicate something that would go onto a submarine. They'll get the blueprint, so they'll learn how to read the blueprints. They'll get a little packet about, you know, hey, here's what manufacturing is, and here are the different career opportunities in manufacturing. And then they'll put it together. And so for the benefit for the schools is, you know, hey, this is free curriculum, this is free material. And the benefit for us is, you know, we're cultivating interest in manufacturing. And NASA actually has a program. NASA's taken this a step further, called HUNCH, and that's an acronym for something. But they'll actually have these schools. And Pine Bush High School in Orange County is one of the schools that participates in this.
We've done one or two remote broadcasts from Pine Bush.
That Gene Haas facility up there is next level.
I did a broadcast over there the day Gene Haas Foundation came in and awarded the big grant.
Yeah.
And
the Gene Haas Foundation, just as an aside, has been a really
you had gone up
partner.
To Hudson Valley Community College, I think you told me, didn't
you? Yeah, I've been that from what I've seen, and I have not been to every community college in New York State, but they are the tip of the spear as far as community colleges with manufacturing education in New York State. Their welding program, you know, is probably next on their list to upgrade, but they have some things going there. They're building a new facility, but that machining center
is unbelievable. And I want to point out the fact that people think about, you know, manufacturing machining is a man's world. Well, guess what? The number of young women I met when I was up there that day, we wound up not doing a remote broadcast up there. I just went up for a visit because that was actually during COVID now that I think about it. But still, their classes were ongoing and is unbelievable. So, Jack Nugent, we're going to take another break here in a second, then wrap it up on this Wednesday morning. But what website should folks go to best get access to the information that you've had an overview of?
Yeah, buildsubmarines.com, right? We have over 2.8 million visitors to date. You know, there's buildsubmarines.com has resources for suppliers, it has resources for educators, it has resources for the everyday person that wants to learn more about the effort. It's a functioning career portal. So if you're a company that builds parts for ships and submarines, you can make an employer profile. If you're someone interested in, you know, maybe switching careers and you already have a manufacturing background, you can go on there and look for other opportunities. You can search by trade, or you can search by where you live. Or if you're someone with absolutely no manufacturing experience and you say, hey, I want to make a career shift, we have over 75,000 different candidate profiles.
Ooh.
And we can connect you right with these education opportunities, whether it's a community college right in your backyard or our National Training Center in Danville, Virginia. Yeah. BuildSubmarines.com. It's an amazing platform.
Robbie, have you posted that on our...
For some reason, Facebook was down for me for the past 30 minutes, but I'm doing it right now.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, so
no problem.
Quick break. Jack Nugent in studio with me. Look at the sports report with some help with our friends at Atlas Star. Jack Nugent, U.S. Navy Maritime Industrial Base rep in studio with me. So, Jack, the microphone is yours.
Great. Yeah. So we were talking a little bit about buildsubmarines.com during the break. I did a quick search. We're sitting here in Fishkill, right outside of Beacon, and within 10 miles of where I'm sitting right now, there's 7 open positions, and that's within 10 miles, right?
Yes.
Whether you're an A&P mechanic, you're a test manufacturing technician, you're an electrical assembler, you're a lead machinist, you're a general foreman, for all of these different manufacturers. And again, that's 7 open positions for more than, 5 different manufacturers within 10 miles of where we're sitting right now.
Right.
And anywhere in the country, barring you're not maybe in the middle of the desert or up in the middle of the woods in Maine, you'll be able to find opportunities for these skilled trade jobs, that are really... with great upward mobility, family-sustaining wages, again, that do not require a college degree. And so I guess maybe the best way to end it is to go back to where we started and just a foot stomp again why ships and submarines, and I'll talk again, submarines specifically, are so important. Because I think if you were to ask, the average Joe on the street, what's the most important thing in the U.S. Department of Defense, they might not all say submarines.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they say tanks or, fighter jets or guns. But if you look at the president's defense budget year over year, the priority investment is for submarines. I mean, in the FY25, fiscal year 25, president's defense budget, $9.9 billion for the Columbia-class missile submarine went up.
So when I think about, aircraft carriers, important platforms, we're talking about, how vulnerable are they to today's electronic warfare, to hypersonic missiles, submarines and their stealth?
Well, right. So the U.S. Navy has all the U.S. Navy submarines are nuclear powered. Not all are nuclear armed. The Columbia class submarine is the nuclear armed.
Right.
Class of submarine. They're replacing the Ohio class. Submarines carry 70% of the nation's nuclear arsenal, and they're the only nuclear platform that is undetectable, right? They're an undetectable undersea force, making them crucial to preventing global conflict, right? And regardless of your thoughts on nuclear energy or nuclear weapons, I don't think you can deny the power of strategic deterrence. And the Columbia class submarine
absolutely
is going to reassure American strategic deterrence in the next lifetime.
And Jack Nugent, that is, I believe, so misunderstood. And I've always talked about it in terms of lessons from the schoolyard. The kid who is portrayed as weak is bullied, but the quiet confidence is like, I'm not going to do anything. Just don't mess with me. Don't mess with me. And that's really what strategic deterrence is all about.
Right. And then to go, the other portion of American submarines are attack submarines, right? And if you really think about what's going on in the South Pacific, whether it's going to, whether that conflict eventually
Taiwan
starts because of Taiwan or it starts because of a maritime dominance conflict in the South China Sea over the Spratly Islands. The only American military asset that we're going to be able to get past the first island chain are submarines.
Mm-hmm.
And, if we don't have the amount of Virginia-class submarines ready to go, if a conflict does happen, You know, whether that conflict happens or not, we haven't done our job as the maritime industrial base. And in order to meet that number, we need to be building two Virginia-class submarines per year, not including what we owe to all Australian allies in the AUKUS agreement. And that is an absolutely massive undertaking. It is a surging demand with an uneven response right now. And our job is to whether it's from workforce efforts or supply chain efforts or messaging efforts or communications efforts or technology development efforts, we need to build the response to meet that surging demand, and it is unprecedented.
And then along with that, simultaneously, and as you said, we're talking about civilian positions here, but then to expand that further to come back to a commercial maritime, U.S. flagged maritime fleet, which we have gotten away from. You and I didn't even get into the Jones Act.
No, we didn't. And I'm a SUNY maritime grad too, so I'm happy to come on a different time and talk merchant marines.
We will talk about that because this is so critical. I had intended to bring you a book this morning, which I with everything all going on, I forgot about the mothball fleet ships that used to be right here on the Hudson River. My friend Tony Musso authored a book about the history of the mothball fleet, which I thought you would find particularly interesting. I will make sure I get you a copy of that.
Thank you, sir.
And this has been great. I'm excited about it for the reasons of national defense, for the reasons of recognition to the small firms all across America who really build the things that we need, and excited about it to engage a young generation from K through 12 to understand the history of our nation, bring them up to speed here, and really we're talking about career pathways forward.
Yeah, I mean it is mutually beneficial for a community college or any sort of CTE or training center to invest in these skilled trades that the Navy needs, because you are employing your graduates and you're also serving your country. Right, the previous secretary of the Navy under the last administration, right before he was relieved of his duties, which is pretty common in a change of administration. He was at a ship naming ceremony at Kings Point at the Merchant Marine Academy on Long Island, and he said, to the American public, if you want to serve your country, learn a skilled trade.
Jack Nugent, U.S. Navy Maritime Industrial Base rep here for New York. Thanks for spending an hour and a half with us.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
See you next week.
GoldSubmarines.com.
See you next week at the Council of Industry Breakfast.
Can't wait.
Listeners, meet me back here tomorrow morning at 6 on The Beacon.